OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The U.S. finally agrees to help Ukrainian pilots learn to fly F-16 jet fighters as Russia captures the town of Bakhmut, or at least what's left of it. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We are joined today by my colleagues, editorial board member Kate Batchelder-Odell and columnist Kim Strassel. Let's start with a clip from Joe Biden, his press conference at the G7 on Sunday, where he says he is agreeing to take a step that he had refused only months earlier.
My private meeting with President Zelensky after the G7 meeting and with his staff, I told him the United States, together with our allies and partners, is going to begin training Ukrainian pilots in fourth-generation fighter aircraft, including F-16s, to strengthen Ukraine's air force as part of a long-term commitment to Ukraine's ability to defend itself. We provided the last year all that they needed to deal with what they were dealing with at the moment. And that's when now we're moving in the direction of putting them in a position to be able to defend themselves in ways beyond what they've had to deal with so far.
Kate, what did you make of this news, particularly the point that the president makes that this is a long-term effort, not for the current battlefield needs, and what difference some F-16s might make?
Well, Kyle, I think it's really unfortunate. We've seen some stories over the weekend basically saying F-16s won't be a game changer, but I would reduce that to a couple reasons that are choices that we made. So the first one is that you mentioned that we are not making any urgent effort to train their pilots. It's going to be a long process. I would note the war has been going on for 15 months. That's a decent chunk of time where if we had started training F-16 pilots sooner, we could be pretty close to having some. And also moving those jets out of allied stocks will take some time. There's been just an enormous press effort to tamp down expectations that these jets are coming anytime soon. So that just is a self-fulfilling prophecy that will blunt their impact. Though, you know, I would still support it if we could get Ukraine an air force for the long term. But just briefly, Kyle, I'd also add the F-16s could be very useful to Ukraine if we could get them to them quickly. We published an op-ed on this a few months back by a retired Air Force general named David Deptula, who went into a lot of detail about how F-16s, for instance, would be very good at taking out Russian surface-to-air missiles, which is the Russian air defense environment is why people say that F-16s won't be that useful, but it's just wrong. And I think they do have the potential to be a game changer on the battlefield and help the Ukrainians take back the offensive in a way that some of these other weapons just can't do, because F-16s can cover so much ground, so much firepower, provide close air support. These missions are valuable, so there's still an opportunity to change our posture and decide to get them there quickly.
President Biden is putting a proviso on any jets or training that is provided to the Ukrainians here, though. Let's listen again. This is him speaking at the G7.
I have a flat assurance from Zelensky that they will not use it to go on and move into Russian geographic territory. But wherever Russian troops are within Ukraine in the area, they would be able to do that.
Kim, on the point about the timing here, as recently as February, Biden told ABC that Ukraine, quote, doesn't need F-16s now. I am ruling it out for now. Pentagon experts were telling the press in March that training pilots on the F-16 could take 2 years to get them trained and equipped. And yet it does seem like President Biden has been, I won't say a day late and a dollar short, but definitely a day late. And it seems like there were two phases of this conflict so far. The first was the initial push by Russian forces toward the capital of Kyiv, which stalled and eventually failed. But it has been clear for some time now that this is turning into a longer term conflict, and it might turn into a so-called frozen conflict. And so to President Biden's point about bolstering Ukraine's defenses in the long term for the Russian offensive that may come this fall or next spring, I mean, that is an effort that has been ongoing for a while now. And some of the reporting, again, suggests that this conversation, this change of thinking within the administration has taken something like 3 months as they have debated this and gone back and forth and now decided to do the thing that they were ruling out only a couple months ago.
Yeah, and you have to ask what the situation on the ground would look like if the United States had simply been on the ball in the beginning, if this administration had sent what Ukraine said it needed, the country, by the way, that's actually fighting this war that does know what it needs on the ground, instead of the Biden administration constantly tiptoeing around Russia. Because this has just been the story again and again. You just gave the timeline on the jets, but we can go through it on so many other pieces of equipment where initially the administration said no, no, no. And then as this continued on, it finally gave in. You know, back in March of last year, the president said the United States wouldn't give the Patriot air defense system to Ukraine because it was worried that it might provoke Russia. And then fast forward November of last year, they finally said they were considering sending those Patriot batteries to Ukraine by December. They had actually agreed to do so and get some over there, at least one. Back in May of last year, the administration ruled out giving Ukraine multiple rocket launch systems. By the end of that month, they had turned around and decided to give them some, but only if Ukraine promised not to use them inside of Russia. And you can look at the tank debate. Remember, 11 months into the war, the Pentagon said there's no need to send tanks to Ukraine. They won't get there in time, and the training will take too long. Now we're sending M1 Abrams tanks. So it's just been the same situation again and again. And this administration likes to brag out of one side of its mouth that it is leading the war effort, etc. But when you look at things on the ground, it's actually our allies who are doing more. I mean, as we were talking about the F-16s, there's a lot of reporting out there that the Brits have been way ahead of us in terms of training and offering other bits of equipment to the Ukrainians when they need them. And so we have to wonder again, what would things look like if this administration hadn't sat on its heels? Maybe this would be over, or at least Ukraine would be in a far better situation than it is now, contemplating another spring counteroffensive.
Speaking of the Patriot missile system, there were some news stories in March of 2023 saying that there were 65 Ukrainians who had gone to Oklahoma to train how to run and operate the Patriot missile system. Here's a quote from Brigadier General. The Ukrainian soldiers are impressive and absolutely a quick study due to their extensive air defensive knowledge and experience in a combat zone. It was easier, though it's never easy, for them to grasp the Patriot system. And then lo and behold, Kate, last week, there's news that the Patriots shot down 18 projectiles, missiles that Russia launched towards the capital of Kyiv. And reportedly, that includes 6 Russian hypersonic missiles. Now, I wonder if you could explain just a little bit of what a hypersonic missile is and how big of a deal is it that we now have real world battlefield experience that a Patriot battery is able to take that kind of thing out of the air?
Yeah, Kyle. So these missile attacks that we're seeing on parts of Ukraine are very dense. And basically, the Russians are trying to overwhelm their air defenses with a variety of stuff, whether small drones, cruise missiles, the hypersonics that we're discussing, which are the ones that we're discussing that the Patriot engaged are called Kinzhal missiles. Some would not consider them a hypersonic because they don't have a hypersonic glide vehicle, which is what we are discussing a lot when we talk about hypersonics. But the Kinzhal has a degree of maneuverability in the air that is designed to try to make it difficult to intercept by a feeder air defense like the Patriot. So it was designed in mind to try to elude that air defense and failed to do so. So I think it's a big deal that the Patriot engaged it. I'd add just one other quick point on the Patriot engaging those missiles. We talk a lot about support for Ukraine and why we're doing it. This is just a kind of a potent reminder that it's not charity work, because the U.S. military is going to learn a lot about Russia's missile technology and programs by the data that we're getting from the Patriots intercepting these missiles. And so we're going to get some information on what our adversary's technology is capable of that we may not have had before. So there are some U.S. advantages to this that we don't often discuss when we're talking about these donated items, which are not purely altruistic.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Don't forget, you can reach the latest episode of Potomac Watch anytime. Just ask your smart speaker, play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. The debate over sending more military aid to Ukraine will inevitably heat up as the Pentagon's current budget for that draws down. But an interesting news story in recent days, apparently the Pentagon has made an accounting error and discovered that it has $3 billion more dollars to send than previously examined. According to the Wall Street Journal story on this, the error was basically in how the equipment that is coming out of American stocks was being valued when it was being sent. So it says the military services inadvertently used a higher value for at least some of the weaponry the Pentagon sent to Ukraine, using valuations for new equipment instead of the older gear pulled out of U.S. stockpiles. So one example that is being given is the U.S. has sent over some M777 howitzers. And when it valued those in terms of its drawdown authority, it looked at the replacement value, except that those are replaced with the advanced system, the HIMARS missile launcher system. And so that cost difference, apparently, in those systems alone was about $75 million. And Kim, on one hand, it's not comforting that the Pentagon could make that kind of error with the army of CPAs and accountants that they have over there. On the other hand, it's not as if they lost anything. It's not as if they misdirected any money. It's basically an accounting problem on how the stuff was valued. And that extra cushion, it seems to me, could really come in handy here. Apparently, not counting that error, the Pentagon has about $2.7 billion left in aid and equipment that it can send to Ukraine. And this was a $3 billion error. So we're talking about more than doubling the amount of value of things left that the Biden administration can send over when Ukraine needs them.
I mean, my goodness, what an embarrassment. Kate was just talking about our military's unbelievable ability to do things like stop hypersonic missiles, and yet somehow it fails to do basic math. I mean, this is kind of just a humiliation, and you don't really understand how it even happens. I mean, who didn't know what we were actually sending to Ukraine and who was making the decision to look at the wrong numbers? I do agree it's going to potentially be a helpful mistake, especially coming right as it does now, because as we all know, and as we've been talking about here, the House Republicans are very much on a tear to lower spending. There's been a big debate within the caucus, too, about whether or not only to target domestic discretionary spending or to in any way also tackle the Pentagon budget. We have argued forcefully that we should not be doing that, that we should be building up the military, putting more money at it. So to the extent that there is a little bit extra sitting here, which means that the White House is not likely in the near term, at least, to have to go back to Congress and ask for any additional funds for the Ukraine war project, that is simply a good thing from a political perspective. That being said, I would echo the complaints House Armed Services Chair Mike Rogers came out and was like, really, folks? Because this is one of those questions, again, you have to ask, what if we'd have known that that money was there? Would we have been able to get more or different or better equipment to Ukraine earlier because of the amounts the White House has recently announced that it's sending another certain tranche, several hundred million dollars worth of equipment? It's arguing that this didn't really change the trajectory of what was going over there. But money does matter. Dollars do matter. And thinking that you were up against a constraint when you weren't is simply not the way you want to do business in an urgent situation like this. So the Defense Department has said that this was a mistake from the lower levels. I certainly hope they find out where the mistake was made and somebody goes and lets us know at some point and some action is taken.
Kate, do you have a sense of what's happening on the ground and the course that the war is now taking? In recent days, the Russians have reportedly captured the town of Bakhmut. And the Journal's news story quotes a Ukrainian general acknowledging that, although I found this analysis in it pretty interesting. It says the fight for Bakhmut has highlighted how limited Moscow's war aims have become. Apparently, this is a town of about 70,000 people. There were heavy Russian losses and some serious fighting on the ground there, even if the Russians have now captured control of the city It quotes a strategic analyst who says the complete takeover of Bakhmut does not make any strategic difference. And so, Kate, I mean, fascinating if you think back again to 15, 16 months ago, where the expectation of everyone was that Russia would pretty quickly drive to Kyiv and capture the capital and turn Ukraine into a puppet state. And now here we are in a really bloody fight for a town of 70,000 people that is apparently not really much of a strategic point in the first place.
Yeah, Kyle, I do want to jump in and say all of my mistakes, like the Pentagon's, can be assigned to lower level employees. But to Kim's point on that, Mike Rogers did say that the accounting error was discovered 2 months ago and only shared with Congress last week. So that it's hard to credit then as just an honest mistake. And I think it is really part of the complacency that we're seeing from the Biden administration. On the question of what's going on the ground, the Bakhmut fighting has been so brutal, but the Wagner group there is pretty much exhausted and doesn't have the ability to continue to push forward. So there is a question about how much this particular victory will matter. And the Wagner group is supposedly going to withdraw to regroup and could leave. The Institute of Study for War says that they could leave, you know, poorly trained Russians in their place. So again, it's not clear exactly that this particular town has much import. But I will say it is a reminder that we need to get the Ukrainians what they need for a successful offensive. And we've been saying that our deliveries on that front are wrapping up and that, you know, they have what they need, but we're still not offering them, for instance, the Army tactical missile system, a long-range missile that you can plug and play in their multiple launch rocket systems. That has the potential to be a real game changer in an offensive, and they already have the equipment to use it. So that is just going to be increasingly urgent. And just to bring it all back to that Patriot system, the Russians are going to keep lobbying the Ukrainians with missiles as much as they can, and we're burning out those air defenses. And if we don't give them stuff like the Army tactical missile system, we have no plans for what comes next. And this is why some Americans are starting to lose support for the war. We still can decide to do something different and give them those missiles that might give them a chance to take the offensive. But I think the Russians' latest progress in Bakhmut is just a reminder of how urgent it is.
And it does seem like the real question for coming months is whether that line of control moves at all, whether Russia is successful in pushing past Bakhmut or whether the Ukrainians can mount a counteroffensive that does some real damage and retakes territory. Because, Kim, to the point that Kate was making about waning interest in this in the West, I mean, I would recommend people go look at some of the heartbreaking photos of Bakhmut that are now dribbling out. There's some drone footage. I mean, the place is a shell of itself. All the vegetation seems to have been removed or burned or blown up. And there are these shell-shocked apartment buildings that at least they look like apartment buildings. Maybe some of them are offices that are standing there. And remember, this is Ukrainian territory. And so the longer that this drags on frozen in place, the more of Ukraine that is just getting battered and bulldozed. And to Kate's point, I mean, it seems strange that the U.S. continues to provide this defensive weaponry, Patriots and F-16s that are not allowed to go into Russian territory at all, according to President Biden, and giving Ukraine enough to resist, but not enough to really change the course of the conflict, the calculus on the ground, and maybe the window of action that President Putin is looking at in the Kremlin.
Yeah, you know, what's needed here, I think, especially in the White House, is a little bit more righteous indignation and remembering what we're looking at here, the first major land war on the European continent since World War II, one of the largest refugee crises ever, the horrific targeting of civilians and crucial infrastructure within Ukraine by Russia specifically to punish civilians. I mean, this is barbaric, and we need to be doing a lot more to bring it to an end. And just to echo what Kate was saying, this so-called victory in Bakhmut could be very pyrrhic in the end, and we should all hope so. If you listen to the Ukrainians, they said their goal all along was to engage in a protracted fight there, kill as many Russian soldiers as possible in that engagement, and buy time for themselves to build up for this big counteroffensive. And you are seeing them maneuvering along the lines, and you could end up with Russia in this situation where it's now going to be on the defensive across hundreds of miles of the front line with a very demoralized set of troops, many of which are conscripted or are convicts. They are poorly trained. As Kate was saying, there's a high possibility the Wagner Group is going to pull out, maybe for as much as 2 months. Its head, Yevgeny Prigozhin, has been increasingly angry at the Russian Defense Ministry, lashing out at them for not providing his people adequate ammunition and for the state of the disorderly Russian troops that they're working beside. And now you have just the news this week that a group of Russian partisans working with the Ukrainians have actually engaged in action across the Russian border in the Russian region of Belgorod, where they, Russians, had to evacuate some of their villages because of this offensive. Now, Russia is saying that it has put that down. But this also brings up the possibility that you could have these kind of partisan actions all up and down the border, a 1,400-mile border between Ukraine and Russia, which would force Russia to have to try and come and defend some of its own border territory. So there's a moment here. It looks as though Ukraine really could seize the offensive, but the United States needs to stick with its resolve and get more to Ukraine so that it can finish this up.
But I guess, Kate, what I'm trying to ask or suggest is, what is the outcome that would be acceptable to Putin and that he could sell as a victory to his countrymen and the people in the Kremlin? And it seems to me like stalemate. At this point, he would take that. I mean, if they draw a line of control somewhere and it turns into a frozen conflict and the barricades and the fortifications go up and he's in control of a huge chunk of Ukrainian territory, there are these two puppet republics that he's set up, and they are answering to his beck and call. I mean, is that a win for him? And he's, and all the time, again, not to repeat myself, but they're lobbing missiles at Kyiv and they're forcing the U.S. and NATO allies to send up expensive Patriot missiles to shoot those down. And some of them are not being shot down and they're hitting apartment buildings and they're hitting places in Ukraine and killing civilians. It seems to me that at this point, Putin would take that as an acceptable victory. And the question is whether he's going to get that or whether the Ukrainians are going to mount a counteroffensive that would deny him that and change the calculus.
Well, I'm not seeing much indication that he has backed off any of his maximalist objectives. And I've seen no sincere interest in negotiating any end to the war from Putin's side. So I think you have to use that as your initial frame of reference, which is that he still thinks he can ride out the West's willpower and that eventually we'll lose interest. I also think that the kind of deal that you're laying out is basically an agreement to give him time to regroup and rebuild his arsenals and then move into more of Ukraine at a later date of his choosing. And that's a loser for us too. So I think Biden has to think about all of that as he tries to weigh what to do. And that's why I think the most compelling course of action is to give them some more weapons that would maybe put Crimea in play or at least force the Russians to defend it. To your point about not letting the Ukrainians go into Russia, you know, that allows them sanctuary to set up staging and to launch attacks into Ukraine. So I think that here, the real answer is to give them the weapons like the Army Tactical Missile System. And I would add too that Republicans who are looking at this and who are thinking about running for president need to think about the kind of world they want to inherit if they were to defeat Joe Biden in a presidential election. It's very popular right now on the right to say, we should get out of this, we should stop giving them more weapons. But again, giving Putin the ability to inch closer to the Polish border is not a problem that I think any Republican president is going to want to deal with.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Kim. Thank you all for listening. You can email us at pwpodcast@wsj.com. If you like the show, please hit that subscribe button, and we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.